Okay, so I have Uberzone right here. We're going to get into it. I'm going to start by playing a track from his album, Faith in the Future. It's called Rhythm Device. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. and we're live on Is Good on killradio.org. And my guest is Uberzone. Q, how are you?
Good morning, everybody. I'm still half asleep.
Good, that's the way we like it.
On musician's hours.
So you're one of the few people I know who actually has an alias for your alias, then.
Alias for my
I mean, you go as Uberzone, mm-hmm. but people call you Q.
Yeah, you know, when you think of these things in your own head, they all make sense to you, but when you try and present them to everybody else, it confuses people. But I always thought of the project like a band, so then you had the Uberzone moniker was the band name, and then Q was my nickname, so.
Right.
Everybody always says that. What should I call you, Q or Uberzone, or what's your real name?
So let's start at the beginning. You've been collecting electronic music devices and things like that since you were a kid.
Yeah.
What possessed you to start doing that?
I don't know. When I was a kid and I got like a game like Operation or something, I always took it apart and like pulled the motor out of it and hooked it up to a battery and did something else with it. Or if I got a plastic model of a car like a Chevy, I didn't build a Chevy, I built like a spaceship. So I've just always been into like, you know, collecting things that were sort of futuristic or things that I could make something out of that were just kind of more on the creative side or something. So anything that kind of, you know, caught my interest that of a technical nature, I guess, I just was always really fascinated with.
How did you make that journey from being interested in technical things and then being interested in music and then combining those two?
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I started out as a drummer and I was always really interested in anything rhythmic. Like, you know, whether it was, you know, an oatmeal can with Lincoln Logs hitting it or like anything, you know, the sound of the windshield wipers in the car or whatever. And, you know, growing up, there wasn't really a lot of electronic stuff happening back when I was a really young kid. And so I kind of heard a lot of rock and stuff. But then I heard Kraftwerk. And the thing that really, you know, kind of pulled me in about that band in particular was that I'd heard other, you know, the kind of spacey electronic stuff, but they had the really heavy rhythmic elements.
Mm-hmm.
And so sort of when I heard the combination of the rhythm and then the electronic elements, that's what really drew me to wanting to do electronic music, definitely.
Were there any other acts in the early electronic scene that kind of piqued your interest at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I liked Depeche Mode and all of the bands that, you know, from when I was a kid and stuff back then. There was a lot of new stuff happening with electronic, but I mean, gosh, what else? Like New Order and stuff like that. But Kraftwerk had that kind of like that aesthetic, that sort of futuristic thing. And, you know, they presented themselves as robots. And I was always into that sort of stuff, you know, robots and science fiction and that kind of thing. So
at what point did you decide you were actually going to take this and actually make music? Like, when did you make your first song?
Well, you know, back, it's funny because when I talk about this stuff, it always seems like so much in a retrospective sense because the technology today has gotten such that if you have a laptop, you can basically do what you could do with
a
recording
studio
25 years ago. But back then, and things have, you know, they've progressed so rapidly that I don't think a lot of people that hear electronic music today even realize that if you really wanted to produce the type of music that we do today on a laptop or on a computer, you would have probably had to have a couple $100,000 minimum to get kind of going. First of all, like the synthesizers back then were monophonic and monotimbral, so they only played one note at a time and one sound at a time. And they were CV gate. They weren't even MIDI at that point. So you had to have a number of synths and devices in order to kind of make the ensemble of sound that you do with just a laptop today. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I used to sneak into my brother Greg's room, who's a musician, and he had a Pro One, an old Sequential Circuits keyboard, and he had like a little Porta Studio. And I had a little like Mattel Electronics, Synsonics drums. So I used to like gank his room when he wasn't there and record like Synsonic drum things down on one track of the Porta Studio and then play the Pro One, you know. So I was already kind of doing stuff back then, but once I sort of heard the rhythms with the bass patterns and the melodies and things like that I was playing over the top, it was just like, that's the thing that has stuck with me my whole life. It just, right when I did that, it kind of like was a sort of a snap, and it drew me in. And I've gone through so many other interests and so many other things, but that music, and especially electronic music, I guess maybe the autonomy of it too, and the idea that you can have a vision and see it from the start all the way to the finish by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Not because necessarily you're a micromanager, but because it's so efficient.
Right.
You know, and you have this specific vision. But that really just totally drew me in at that point.
Yeah, I've heard it described as sort of in a similar way that filmmakers describe the process of sort of putting together this track, putting together this idea and seeing it through from beginning to end. And then when you're finally finished with it, it's done and you can mm-hmm. present it and it's the same every way, which is a much different vibe than, you know, a folk artist or a rock band or something like that, where mm-hmm. There's equal parts live yeah. performance.
Yeah.
When did you start sharing your music with people?
Even back then, you know, I showed friends, and it was, you know, like the whole field of electronic music was so new at that point that, I mean, anything like a tiny little sound off of a synthesizer and a little pattern would be totally fascinating to a lot of people. So, like, my friends were like, wow, you know.
Yeah. The theme to Beverly Hills Cop.
But I always felt like, I mean, even back then, like, just, you know, playing with old synthesizers. And then I eventually kind of went the formal route and started really reading because I was so fascinated by it. I really wanted to know about every single aspect of it. So I read every book and magazine I could get my hands on. And I sort of, I don't know, spoke synthesizer. I kind of get along really well with synths. Like, I just have always had that propensity to be able to, you know, put me behind anything, and I can kind of get something out of it that's trippy and funky. It's just sort of like a natural extension of the sort of sounds I want to hear in my head, you know? Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, anything from a DX7 to a Pro 1 to a Mini Moog, you know, it's just...
And do you play it in the sense that someone plays the keys, or is it more about programming?
Not really. I'm kind of a hack player, you know? I just play my, you know, bass lines and triads and simple chord progressions and things like that. Mm-hmm. I can kind of, you know, pick my way around a keyboard, but I'm definitely no player. I'm more of a drummer. So,
now the electronic music journey for you, is it about the hunt for the perfect beat, or are your songs, how can I put this? Are you thinking about telling a story with each track, or are you thinking more about how people are going to respond to it on the dance floor?
Well, I mean, definitely there's an intent when you start a track. Sometimes, I guess. Sometimes you go in the studio and you're just having fun and then something comes out of it. But if I'm doing something where, as a remix, for instance, if somebody's commissioned it for the floor or whatever they want, something that's kind of more of a dance floor-oriented track, you do have some predispositions, you know, like when you're going to the studio, things that you kind of want to achieve in there or whatever. But, you know, and then conversely, if it's an album track and you don't feel the pressure of having it work on a floor, you might want to do something that tells a little bit more of a story. There's just so many different ways to approach it for me, you know, when I go into the studio. And I guess the most natural and the most interesting and fun thing for me to do is to go in the studio without having any kind of thing on my mind, because then you kind of are able to just let it be a real extension of what's going on in your head at the time. But sometimes, you know, the result isn't something that maybe anybody else will want to hear but you, you know. Sometimes I'll put on a beat and, like, drool on the board for a half hour while it plays because I just like rhythm so much. But I'll use some, like, sound generation tools and Reactor and, like, make these sound washes that I don't know if anybody else would like but me. So, you know, it's real easy to get self-indulgent when you go into a studio too. So I guess that's where that sort of maybe a little bit of the vision comes in. You have an idea. But the most important, the most elemental thing when I go into the studio is that, and when I go to the record store, and I've kind of always said this, but it's really true, is that when I'm working on a track, I'm always trying to write the record that I want to hear that isn't out anywhere. I know some people say, God, you know, I really like the kind of music that I'm hearing such and such artists do, and I want to make music like that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that music kind of already exists, so I want to make music that's has elements of what I like about that, but is totally something I'm not hearing. There's other things about it.
And that's true in all genres. I mean, there's so much redundancy out there. Where people realize, oh, this band's really successful right now. If I do something exactly like that, maybe I'll be able to ride that train.
I guess to an artist, it sounds painfully obvious, but to a person that's a listener and just somebody that likes music, they might be thinking more in terms of, like, I want to write music just like that because I really like it. But if I go to the store, I hear records, it's like I'm kind of going through. A lot of the time I'm listening to the records going, trying to figure out what I don't want to do, as opposed to, like, finding things that are like, oh, that's a good idea, you know? Because it's like, once it's been done, it's kind of almost like there's that excitement of doing something you feel like you maybe broke a little bit of a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's really hard to do, especially nowadays where, because of all of the progression of the technology and leveling of the playing field, which has a lot of positive attributes, there's more people writing electronic music than there are listening to it. You know, that's what it feels like to me sometimes. So there's a lot of, you know, like if you look at it in terms of like canvas to paint on, there really isn't much room left in a lot of time. You know, a lot of time when you go in the studio, you feel really constricted by that. And it's getting harder and harder, I feel like, to do something that's original and different and new, whereas 10 years ago, there was really a lot of room to kind of play with it. So,
do you see your audience listening to your music, like sitting down with their iPod and actually just sitting and listening to an Uberzone track as much as they are dancing to it? I mean, is it as important to you?
I mean, that's always been the hope. There's, you know, in the dance music genre, electronic dance music genre, it seems like there's sort of two kind of camps. There's sort of the DJ camp, and then there's the producer/musician camp.
Right, because there's some music that's clearly only intended for people to dance to. You can't imagine just sitting and listening to it.
And it probably has a lot to do with where you're coming from. Like, a lot of the people that started out as DJs, you know, think in a much different kind of way than a producer would or a musician. I come from the musician side, so when a DJ approaches a track, I think they think really in terms of floor, and they think in terms of, like, what's going to work within the set that they would potentially play.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a musician like myself, I'll come out from a totally different angle, you know. And, just
and if it develops into a dance song, then that's what it does.
Definitely.
And tell me about your entry into the world of DJing, and how is that different from composing?
Well, I think, you know, whether you start out as a DJ or you start out as a musician, it's always good to explore the other side too. You know, there's things that you learn. If you are making tracks that are intended to work, you know, in a club, and if you're doing it for vinyl these days, you're pretty much putting it on the vinyl with the hopes that it would be something that would get played in a club, because most of people's listening medium these days are MP3s, WAV files, or CDs. So if it's going on vinyl and you want it to work in the club, you know, you kind of... I just lost my train of thought.
Well, we're talking about the difference between being a musician and being a DJ.
Anyway, the DJs approach it kind of from a DJ perspective and something that'll work in a club, and a musician kind of comes at it from that perspective. So when I started kind of DJing a few years ago, I started really appreciating a lot of the things that my DJ friends were saying about the tracks when I'd write them, like mix in, mix out, and just the kind of the formatting of the track.
So it affected the way you wrote your music.
It did, and also you get an immediate result of what's going on with the track. So when you DJ, you can play the track out and you go, oh, that section doesn't really work, or that drags on a little too long, or hey, that's cool, I'm going to let that roll a little bit longer. And you start seeing the track a little bit different in a kind of healthy way when it comes to the medium, because musicians have a tendency and producers have a tendency to maybe throw too many sounds in or to make tracks change up too much.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's this tracky sort of pieces that'll come out that just work really well in a club environment, and the intention really isn't to necessarily listen to it in a car, you know, or in a home stereo. But in that environment, it's so synergistic with the volume and the way the PA sounds and just the vibe of the night that it's a totally kind of different thing. And when I started the Uberzone project, my total intention was to try and make music that you could play in a club, but also sounded good in a car. It had enough, you know, interesting elements. But there's always going to be a little bit of some sort of compromise one to the other, because there'll be elements about the dance club that might bore the shit out of you when you get in the car, I guess.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. That's fine.
There's elements that like might bore you when you get in the car if it's like too tracky, and then vice versa, if you get in a club, it changes too much. So anyway, it's healthy for, I think, both to do the other, because it kind of teaches you what that where the line is. You know?
I wonder sometimes about ultra repetitive electronica, some of which I really like. In some ways, the repetition itself is the instrument. You know, mm-hmm. It's like the way that they're using repetition mm-hmm. is what is the artistic part of it. Yeah. But then there's some tracks that just go on forever, like Plastic Man. I mean, Richie Houghton is an amazing artist, but sometimes I wonder if he's like, you know, set it up. He's like, oh, this is a really good beat. I'm going to go out and make a sandwich and come back.
That's the thing. That's the thing that is really strange about electronic music as a genre, and it's different, is that, and that's one of the things that I actually really do struggle with when I get in the studio, is that you really want the perception to be, when the person's listening to it, you want them to understand what it is you're trying to do. And you almost feel like when you do, I think one of the common mistakes, and I mean, I've done it, and pretty much everybody else has done it, is when an electronic musician does an artist album, they really want to kind of branch out and do a lot of other different interesting things. But a lot of the time, the crowd that has been buying the records for a long time wants to hear them do the things that they're doing in the club. But when you're a musician or an artist, you're thinking, I don't know if that sustains itself for 7 minutes on a CD.
Mm-hmm.
And in some instances, I just think it really doesn't. You know, there's definitely good repetition and bad repetition, stuff that when it repeats causes and induces sort of a trance-like state and really does kind of dry you in. And then there's ones that make you just want to scream, because it's just like, you know, and I guess it depends on the person listening to it and, you know, whether it's something that they latch onto or not. But I like, even with this record, Ideology, I flip-flopped back and forth a couple times, because I listen to so many different styles of music, and I love so much different, you know, music. And so from like Brazilian lounge music to Radiohead to Autechre to, you know, Sex Pistols. So you're listening to all this stuff and you're going, I want to make a record that would be really interesting for me to hear. But it's easy to get self-indulgent, because you're not thinking about, okay, this is my project. This is kind of what people are sort of used to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at one point, it's easy to definitely get kind of confused when you go in the studio. You have to have that sort of idea. This is what the record's going to be about. That's where it really does help to have some sort of a path to go down to and say, this is what I'm willing to be flexible with in terms of what my intentions are when I go in the studio on a creative, you know, side. And then, you know, if something starts getting a little out of bounds, keep recording it and, you know, use it for a side project maybe, mm-hmm. which is what I'm intending to do this time.
Do you have side projects?
I have this thing called Plastic Astronaut that I haven't released anything yet underneath the name, but some of the Uberzone stuff that doesn't really work on the Uberzone records or like tracks that I write when I go in the studio will get sort of relegated to Plastic Astronaut. And then I'm doing some vocal tracks with a female vocalist and I'm sort of just writing them, you know, as me, Tim, writing them, you know, and then if they can be remixed or whatever to work on the Uberzone record, that's cool. And if not, I might put them like online or something like that. So they won't be on the physical release, but if people want to hear where maybe the remixed version came from, they can mm-hmm. check those tracks out. Because some of them are almost like R&B sounding. They're just totally different. You know?
Let me ask you one more question about DJing, and we'll go on and talk about the new album and some of your other music. One of the things that's nice about doing electronic music, as you were saying, is sort of being self-contained. And you're not really exposed to the audience as much. You don't get that immediate feedback. But when you DJ, even if you're not playing your own music, basically when someone hires you as a DJ, what they're saying is, I'm paying you to be trusted with the sound of the space.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the experience of DJing, especially early on, and physically being up there and having an audience looking at you and depending on you for playing the right songs. And what does it feel like if a song isn't working and that kind of thing?
There was a lot of really, really interesting things that came out of me DJing. One, I mean, probably first is something that I thought was probably inevitable. The appreciation for the DJs that I think are amazing now definitely grew, because it's not just about like the technical aspects, the beat matching and whatnot. It is definitely about knowing what records work well together. So you learn all those attributes, and I kind of sort of counted on those things happening. But the things I didn't really count on happening were sort of some intangibles, like, you find out where everybody has a musical arrogance level, I think. And it's like, for an artist, if you really want to have a sense of integrity, and if you're a person that sort of found in humility, like I am, definitely, I'm very humble about the things that I do and modest, because I'm just a typical insecure artist. You know, every time you do something, you go, is this good? And you're really...
So you're not a diva at all.
Huh? Oh, no, not even by any stretch of imagination. But conversely, if I hear a track that one of my friends has done that I think is amazing, I'll get really cocky about that because it's not mine, you know? So it's like not my creation. So I can go, I love this track. I think this track is the coolest thing in the world. And if none of you like it, I don't really care.
Yeah, and it still reflects well on you a little bit because you know that person.
The funny thing about that, though, is that you'll never be like that about one of your own tracks.
Right.
It's, unless, you know, there's those guys out there, I think, that are just artists that just have that sort of, I don't know, they have the blinders up or they have that.
Or it's part of an act.
I guess, you know, but I've never met an artist that didn't have some sort of insecurity, you know, about what they do. And I think it's healthy because it constantly kind of keeps you analyzing and thinking about what you're doing, and it helps you to kind of grow, and it always gives you incentive, too, to, like, push harder to do something that you think you've done that's a level of, you know, creativity and, all around good music or whatever. You've got this plateau of what you're trying to reach, and you're always... If I felt like I reached that 10 years ago, I wouldn't be writing anymore.
Right.
You know, I feel like that's why I really push on, because there's that sound that I still want to do, you know, that I haven't done yet. You know?
Yeah, I mean, not to get too philosophical, but there's really no point in engaging in any kind of art unless you're trying to, you know, unless you're getting into, you know, your insecurities and your, you know, your form of expression. I mean, you have to have something to say.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But, yeah, that aspect of DJing, though, really fascinated me because... I think when I play a live show, and if, you know, after playing live shows for 10 years, you're going to have good shows and you're going to have bad shows, and you're going to have shows where you really communicate well with the audience, and then sometimes you're sort of out of sync, you know, and you kind of learn how to work with the ebb and the flow of that. And I feel really fortunate because I've had many, many more good shows than I have the bad shows. But when you play a bad show, I think when you're playing your own tracks, it affects you. But when you DJ and you're playing, like, you know, 20 tracks that you think are just like the coolest and best tracks out right now, and they're not yours, it teaches you a little bit of sort of confidence in maybe your ear. So when you do go back in the studio, you do feel a little bit more comfortable, you know, with the procedure of it, because you feel like, okay, you start kind of tying the two together and going, I like this track, a lot, and you know, whether it worked in this instance or didn't. Sometimes you kind of have to accept the fact that whether, you know, when you're writing this track and you think it's really cool, it's just going to happen that some people might not like that track, and you're just going to really be into it, you know?
Right, but you need that level of confidence. You need to believe that you know what sounds good.
Yeah, especially after doing it for a number of years and then doing the DJ thing later in my career, you know? So,
why don't we play a track from the CD that you brought in, and tell me what we're going to play.
This is a track called Satisfaction.
Is that the first track?
Yeah, it's first track. And it's going to be... I'm still deciding what's going to go on both sides of the new single, but this is probably going to be one of the tracks. And there's several different mixes of this track. This is it's called the Weirdo Mix, for a fairly obvious reason when you hear it. But there's like a kind of a housier version of this, and there's like a more percussion-based version. A lot of time I do like several mixes of tracks.
You do remixes of your own songs?
Yeah, because I'm still always trying to, you know, nail certain things about the track that I want to nail, you know.
Well, cool. When we come back from this, we'll talk about the remixing process. I know you've collaborated with a lot of great artists, so... my guest is Uberzone, and you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. And you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org.
It is an unmatchable. It is an unmatchable. It is an unmatchable. science fiction.
I'm a weirdo.
Zone on is good on killradio.org.
I'm normal.
We're back on Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Uberzone. So tell me just real quick about that track. Where will we see that track?
And that's going to come out. Am I?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay. Yeah, that's going to come out as possibly one of the sides of the first single. I've got quite a few tracks at this point, so I'm trying to just figure out what would be the best first single. And I brought another track with me, Vibrate, which will potentially be the other side. And I don't know which one's going to be what side or whatever, but. When I started that track, I did the initial one that was kind of a little more cheeky sounding. It had like an electric piano mix in it and stuff. And I wanted to do one that was a little bit trippier, so I did that mix. And then I did another mix where we really kind of focused on the percussion of the thing. So, but I'm kind of leaning towards this one. It sounds to me the one that maybe would be the best for a single, I guess.